Hello and welcome to the American Magazine Podcast. This is a special podcast with my colleague, Father James Martin. We're going to be talking about the sixth season of Mad Men. Welcome, Father Jim.
Thanks a lot. It's our sixth podcast, and we're trying to look at the Catholic look at Mad Men.
I'm not sure if we've done a full six seasons, but we've done it a couple times. But this season, we thought it was, again, very rich with a lot of themes that are of particular interest to some of our listeners. So let's start with the first one that you've come to us with, Father Jim, which is confession. Some of the characters have moments that, you know, where they confess certain things to one another. Maybe you can mention a few examples.
Yeah, well, the big one was, we're assuming that people have seen everything, so there won't be too many spoiler alerts. But the season kind of led up to the big confession of Don Draper, the main character, who has sort of hidden his past from almost everybody in the firm and even in his family. And at the end, he makes this very sort of stunning confession about the way he grew up. In a meeting where he's pitching to Hershey executives, he sort of talks about his somewhat poverty-stricken childhood where he grew up in a brothel. And then he brings his children to see the old house where he grew up, and that's the last scene of the show. So, I found that very just striking. It almost seemed like the whole season was kind of leading up to that.
Yeah, even the whole series in some ways. Yeah, I mean, there's two people he sort of confesses to. One is the Hershey executives, which is weird, but there is something, I mean, you can see maybe why he loves the world of advertising, because here is a company that, you know, a product that really charmed him as a youth. Like, this was like the one good thing in his life growing up in this brothel, was getting the money to buy a Hershey bar.
Yeah, and you would think that honesty, actually, for a minute during the presentation, I thought the Hershey executives were, you know, going to respond to that and say that's really beautiful, but of course they were pretty horrified by it. And then also to his kids, basically, which you and I were talking about before. I wasn't sure how to take it, whether or not it was a kind of moment of confession and revelation and sort of love, or it was it a kind of in your face, you know, like, this is where I grew up and this is why I'm so bad. I don't know. What did you think about it?
Well, I was pretty moved by it because he actually seemed to be reaching out to his daughter, who, I mean, he's really put through hell, for lack of a better term, this season with his, you know, she comes upon him when he's having the affair with his neighbor. She is basically said, I don't know anything about my father, because she's finally realizing that, you know, he is kind of a cipher. So I found it moving, and I kind of have hope for that relationship. It's really the only relationship in his life that he really is interested in making work.
Yeah. I mean, even with Megan, his wife, that doesn't seem to be high on the list of priorities. You know, although she is what? She's 13 years old. Is that right? Yeah. Something like that. And I was wondering the ability of a 13-year-old to take that in, you know, kind of just sort of thrown at her. But you're right. That last look between the two of them, I thought was really beautiful. And it was sort of filled with possibility. It could go either way. She could be, you know, turned off or overwhelmed. Or she could say, you know, my father's finally trying to be honest with me. The other sort of striking confession was Ted, who's one of the new partners after the merger in the business, when he comes to Don and says that he has been basically having a sort of a small affair, or if you can call it that, a short affair with Peggy, and that he needs to get out of New York and move to California. And, you know, he's very blunt. And frankly, I found that character kind of refreshing in the midst of all the mendacity that goes on in Sterling Cooper.
Yeah, Ted has been, because he actually seems to have some integrity. I mean, he is in love with Peggy, but he wants to remain loyal to his family. And yeah, he has this honesty when he comes to Don, saying, you know, kind of man to man, this is, I need your help. And I mean, Peggy recognizes that in Ted. And that's one of the things I think she loves about him, is that he actually is a man of some integrity, and hopes when the two companies merge, which is a big part of this season, that some of that would rub off on Don, but doesn't seem to be the case.
Right, and she goes into Don at one point and says, why don't you act like an adult, basically, with the implication that Ted is acting like an adult. And also, in terms of confession, Ted comes into Don a couple times and says, you know, why are we having these problems, or, you know, what's going on? And so you get the sense of someone who's trying to be upfront, Ted, versus, you know, Don, who, you know, keeps everything sort of hidden and is, you know, has all these kind of Machiavellian moves, basically.
Right.
Because doesn't he get him drunk at one point?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought the theme of confession was very strong and actually portrayed positively, because in both those cases, Don and Ted, you feel that these people are doing something good.
Right.
Even though Hershey, you know, was a little surprised.
But that's a good point. I mean, so much of the series has been about the office politics and about what's happening under the surface and people manipulating one another and never being direct. And suddenly you have this character in Ted who is direct mm-hmm. and wants to solve problems and doesn't want to, like, be dragged down by all this kind of office politics, which is very healthy, but in the context of the show, it's surprising.
Yeah, he's like an outlier, yeah. And they kind of don't know what to do with him. Yeah, you know, so they get him drunk, basically. Right. Yeah,
I mean that's sort of where I mean maybe that's been a development of office culture since the 50s and 60s that it's you know there's human resources departments that try to mediate conflicts and try to get people to talk with the other and be open and learn how to deal with disagreements. I mean, so that might be something they're exploring.
Yeah, I mean, speaking as a former HR person, I saw a lot of honesty in the portrayal of corporate America there.
Now, another theme that you bring up is fidelity. And obviously, Don seems to fall off the wagon again here.
I mean, constantly.
Last season, he was pretty much loyal to Megan for the whole season. But this season, he has this affair with his neighbor.
Yeah, he basically loses interest, you know. Yeah. I find him in many ways sort of a child. You know, he just gives into his emotions, and he has this torrid affair with the neighbor. And strangely, he becomes friends with her husband, the, you know, world-famous brain surgeon, and respects him, right? And there's this one scene where he says something like, "You're doing wonderful work," and I think the brain surgeon goes out skiing in the snow to do an operation in the middle of a snowstorm and says, you know, "You're changing the world. You're doing wonderful work." And you think, boy, this is Don really coming to understand that this guy's a really solid individual. Then he goes over and, like, has sex with his wife, you know. And my sense was almost to get back at him, you know, to kind of put him in his place and to say, you know, "I'm just as powerful and I'm just as, you know, influential," or whatever. I find his philandering, you know, has gotten less and less charming, as it were, you know, for the character, and just more and more kind of disgusting, and particularly with the neighbor.
And meanwhile, you have Megan, who's very committed to the relationship and to the marriage, and is, you know, really trying to make it work with the kids, which is not easy to do as, like, a young wife. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, she's getting some of her colleagues are making passes at her, including, you know, the couple, the man
right.
and the woman. And she, you know, there's no question in her mind that Don is her husband and she's loyal to him. But she wants to make that work, you know, but Don doesn't seem interested. Maybe at the end of the season, there's a sign that he's back, but it's left a question.
Yeah, it's left up in the air whether or not she's going to stay with him, you know, and I wouldn't blame her. The other sort of question of fidelity, I think, of course, is Pete. And, you know, he had an affair with a woman he met on the train, I think, mm-hmm. from his neighborhood. And that ruined his marriage. I mean, Trudy, you know, unlike Megan, is unwilling to put up with that kind of stuff. And I thought she had a lot of backbone, but he too seems like a child. I mean, he's basically just giving into his, you know, his kind of animal passions, and doing it with someone right down the street as well, which is pretty dangerous. And it turns out to be, you know, dangerous for him.
And his wife basically at the end of last season kind of gave him an out, said, "Here, you can have an apartment in the city." And as she says in this season,
right.
"You could, you know, if you were more discreet and, you know, didn't in the backyard," is essentially like he's went in the neighborhood to find somebody. And that's what enrages her. You
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of fidelity, you also have Ted, who, again, is a refreshing character in that he has a family. He's committed to his wife. He's in love with Peggy. But finally, at the end of the season, he, although, you know, he does have this affair, he resolves like he can't let it go any farther.
Mm-hmm.
So it's refreshing compared to Don, compared to Roger, people who have, you know, basically dropped their wives and remarried. Here you have somebody who really is committed to his marriage.
And it's kind of a surprise when he comes in and says to Don, "I want to move." You think, well, wait a minute, this is Mad Men. Shouldn't he be now carrying on his affair with Peggy, you know? And also she, you know, Peggy I felt sorry for. I mean, she's sort of unlucky in men, whereas she's a little luckier in business. She lives with this guy who seems, you know, they seem to be on their way to marriage. And then is when they sort of split
him.
Up, she stabs him, right? That was quite a scene. She maybe unconsciously stabs him to get him out of her life. And then she sort of throws herself at Ted, you know, somewhat desperately. So there's a sense of her also not respecting Ted's marriage, you know? I mean, I found it a little selfish that, all right, now that I've broken up with my boyfriend, I'm going to sort of, you know, make a move for you.
Right. She basically goes, after the breakup, basically goes to his office. And
yeah.
She's disheveled, and, you know, she just kind of throws herself at his feet. And he basically tries to push her away. But eventually, you know, they start to have this office romance, and it's very obvious to everybody in the office that something's going on.
Yeah, and then she shows up in that, you know, hotsy-totsy dress, you know, and basically sort of parades herself. And so, you know, you feel sorry for her at the end. I mean, in each of these situations, you know, the person who is unfaithful, you know, you end up feeling sorry for them because they really created a mess in their lives.
But she seems to want a family. She wants to, I mean, there was that scene where they were together, I guess, deciding on an apartment to buy with her first boyfriend. And he says, "Well, that's I don't want to raise my kids. See our kids here, and you can see it in her eyes, like, oh, he wants to have kids with me." And she was really, you know, really charmed by that, you know, and really. But obviously, it didn't work out.
She should have taken the apartment on Second Avenue. The subway would have been there in a few years.
It's fine. Yeah, only a couple more years. Now, family is related to this theme of fidelity. Pete's family is going through some difficult moments.
Well, yeah, and I mean, he leaves his wife, and you really feel for him when he comes back to the home that's still there, you know, that Trudy is maintaining. And also, his mother dies in a very kind of, I wasn't sure if we were supposed to take that as amusing, you know, that she falls off a ship. And
his father was killed in a plane crash, so there are these freak accidents that seem to occur in his family.
Yeah, and you see him with his brother, I thought, which was very interesting, trying to decide what to do, you know, about the mother afterwards. And it's a very kind of cold, stilted relationship. His mother is, has some dementia towards the end. And so you have a sense of him trying to connect, but really having none of the hardware to be able to do that, you know, probably from his background. And then Roger's the other one I found that was really poignant this season. You know, Roger Sterling is trying to connect with, that's his child, right? That's Joan and his child.
Yeah.
And tries to connect with the daughter as well, the daughter with one of his wives, I guess.
And her son, his grandson, and basically the daughter's pretty manipulative because she wants money from him and is basically withholding the son, the grandson, until they... And then she basically cuts off relations when he takes him to
Planet of the Apes. Yeah.
So, that's always fun. I mean, the show has these kind of cultural touchstones that it mentions. I mean, this season you had the killing of both Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King, that was a more central moment. The RFK assassination was kind of a passing note. But these other major cultural events, you're like, oh, right, that's
Planet of the Apes. It was kind of, I thought it was pretty arbitrary, too, for her to just say, you're never going to see him again because you took him to this movie. And it was, you're right. I'm just realizing that she is very manipulative, and it is often about money for her. And it's sad because he does want a relationship with her and with the child, too. And so as a kind of consolation prize almost, he goes to Joan, you know, and tries to establish a relationship with the son. Yeah.
And I think he would like to have perhaps establish a family with Joan, but she doesn't seem interested.
Yeah, well, also, I think Joan is probably the smartest person on that show. I think she sees right through Roger Sterling and how, you know, faithful or, back to the second theme, how faithful or unfaithful he would be as a husband.
Now, Joan, speaking of honesty, this is a little dishonesty from Joan.
Yeah, she did a very weird thing. She had, as I recall, had a sort of meeting with someone from Avon, I think that was the company, and it looked like she was about to, you know, kind of sign an account. And by rights, because I think she's not an account executive there, she was supposed to bring Pete into it. And of course, she feared that Pete was going to take all the credit. So she arranges this meeting, and it was supposedly for her and Pete and Peggy, but she cuts Pete out. And Peggy at the dinner is actually sort of horrified, you know, when this happens and she realizes what's going on. And also Joan puts on this kind of full court press, and Peggy's really sort of taken aback. You know, basically that's not the way you do it. She doesn't know the business that well. And when she comes back to the office, Pete finds out and blows up. And in a sense, you know, rightfully. And too complicated to describe how it happens, but Peggy basically saves her. And yet it creates a rift in their relationship. And that's the first time I thought, you know, here's this person who is always trying to be, you know, have a sense of integrity, you know. That's why it was so hard for her to sleep with that guy that they asked her to sleep with, the Jaguar, Chevrolet, or whatever. Jaguar. And, you know, now she's sort of shown herself as just as liable to, you know, bend the rules to get an account as everybody else.
Now, honesty has been a theme throughout the series with Don Draper and his identity and who he is and what his past is like. We have Don Draper, D.D. Now we've got Bob Benson, B.B.
Bob Benson. Oh, that's right. I never thought of that, right?
He has also not been completely honest about his own past.
Yeah, Bob Benson is probably the most interesting character. You don't know, you know, what his background is. I noted with some bemusement that he lied about going to Wharton, which made me laugh. Yeah, he's this guy that comes in as, I wasn't quite sure as what, as like a sort of office manager or a
he's just hanging around. And then, and Joan saves his job at one point because they're looking to cut people. And she, because they're establishing this relationship,
right,
she basically makes a maneuver to get him, allow him to keep his job.
Yeah, and you're led to believe that he sort of saw that coming and
right,
was trying to ingratiate himself,
yeah,
pretty much with everybody. But
yeah,
he is very unctuous and sort of smarmy, and he hangs around. And then suddenly he's brought into these different accounts, and he gloms onto a number of people. He gloms onto Joan, of course. You know, he takes her child out to the beach, I think, one day. He tries to glom onto Roger, but that doesn't work. Roger sees right through him. And then sort of most infamously, he gloms onto Pete by basically making a pass at him.
Yeah.
And it's really very well filmed. Pete sort of pulls away. And then it seems that Pete kind of has the upper hand because he has this info on him. He finds out, doesn't he? He calls
Duck, the headhunter, to do a little research.
And the guy finds out that that Bob is a complete fake. And then you think that Pete has the upper hand, but then at Chrysler, you remember what happened there?
Oh, this is at
Chevrolet,
GM,
right,
where he basically cleverly encourages him to try to drive this car, which is in the showroom. It's a Camaro or something. And it's a stick. And, of course, you know, Pete, being a Manhattan resident, has never drove a stick in his life.
I'm surprised he could drive at all.
Exactly. So, and you could just see it slowly developing. But, yeah, that relationship is very strange. And, you know, you thought that Pete had the upper hand there, but then Bob is kind of trying to undermine him, too. So,
And you also thought Pete had the upper hand with, you know, Bob is kind of like a mini Don, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, he's hidden his past. He's sort of rising up.
He's also good at what he does. I
mean,
they like him at Chevrolet.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's very suave and, you know, good looking and, you know, he has nice suits and things like that. But I was thinking that Pete had thought he had the upper hand with Don, when Don sort of, you know, he finds out about Don's past, and that really hasn't helped him too
right,
much in the company. He's sort of treated poorly. And it seems like, you know, the message might be, even though people know that you're a fake, you know, you can still have power and still move
right,
up, which is not a particularly, you know, wholesome message. But yeah, lots about honesty. The other person we were talking about is Megan. Why don't you say what you were reflecting on in terms of sort of modern marriages and...
Right, we were talking about this earlier, how Don's marriage to Betty, and also the other marriages in the show, Rogers to his first wife, they're kind of traditional male-female roles. They are not really soulmates. I mean, maybe they were passionately in love at one point, but they've kind of assumed these traditional roles. Whereas Megan is younger, and she seems to be coming from this generation that wants to be soulmates with their husband. They want to, like, have very honest conversations and really, you know, confess to one another their deepest longings. But Don is not interested in that. You know, that it's making him uncomfortable. It's obvious.
Yeah, and he's maybe more of an old-fashioned marriage,
yeah,
where, you know, you could say that it's more formal and more stilted. And, you know, as you were talking, I was remembering that scene where he's at the party and he gets high out in California, and he has this sort of, he almost drowns. And Roger saves him. And, you know, it's one of the many kind of death motifs that have happened. We were talking before we started this podcast of Don's failed ad campaign, where you have a guy who's left his clothes on the beach and there's
yeah,
a sort of suicidal reference. But anyway, in his drowning or his near-death experience, he has this sort of fantasy of what Megan should be like, which is this kind of like, oh yeah, go ahead and have an affair. You know, whatever you want to do is fine with me. And I thought, well, that's his idea of a wife. You know, I mean, he just wants to be able to do whatever he wants to do. Versus, you know, Megan trying to be honest, you
right,
know, and trying to work things out.
Well, Megan and Ted, they seem to be coming from this newer generation where, like, honesty and directness are valued. And for people of Don's generation, you know, that's sort of strange.
Yeah, that's and the way he moved up in the world is to be dishonest,
yeah,
basically, and to cover everything up. And
that's
yeah,
one of the inside jokes here, is this is the pre-Google age where people like Don Draper and Bob Benson can get
that's
jobs.
Right. Yeah,
and totally hide their past.
The other great honest moment was with Betty. Ironically, they were sleeping together, even though Betty's been remarried and Don's remarried. And afterwards, Betty turns to him, and I can't remember the exact quote, but it's something like, I figured you out. Once people start to love you, you pull away. Isn't it something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, well, he's talking about, she was feeling sorry for Megan, saying basically she doesn't realize that the way to drive you away is to basically fall in love with you.
Yeah. Which was a great insight from someone who, I think, you know, in the past didn't seem that, you know, that sort of bright or with it or insightful. She always seemed like she was a little bit of in a haze.
Right.
But somehow she's trying to be, well, except for the fact that she's cheating on her husband. She's trying to make a go of it. And she seems to have had a little bit more self-knowledge this season, which I like because she was starting to seem as a little bit of a flat character.
Yeah. Well, she did go to a psychiatrist, I think, in previous seasons. And, you know, maybe, you know, her new husband is... seems like a good guy, mm-hmm. so maybe that is helping her develop a little more. Poverty, that's another subject that you brought up that I was kind of surprised at, but you're right. This season we seem to see kind of the urban rest in Manhattan. You're beginning to see the other side of life in New York City.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot. I mean, you were talking about RFK and Martin Luther King, so there is this kind of question about social justice before they tackled, you know, obliquely like the Vietnam War, things like that. But... you know, two of the scenes that were very strong, Betty goes to St. Mark's Place, which is in Greenwich Village, which they got a lot of criticism for portraying it as, you know, much more gritty than it was, apparently. To find, I think, one of her daughter's friends, isn't that right, who has sort of kind of gone astray. And, you know, there's a scene about, you know, how she confronts poverty and what it's like down there. And then Peggy and her boyfriend move into what's now a very nice part of New York City, the Upper West Side. And they're dealing with poverty. And I think it's in that relationship where you see this desire of her boyfriend to want to live among the poor, or at least people who are struggling, and they're unable to do it. You know, they can't do it. It's very realistic. And then finally, the last one was Don. I mean, Don basically brings his children into this poor background where he grew up. So on the one hand, some of it seemed a little fake. I mean, the St. Mark's Place and some of the stuff on the Upper West Side seemed a little fake. It wasn't as the verisimilitude that you saw in the offices didn't seem to be matched by the stuff on the streets. But at least they were trying to take a stab at it.
And also Don's secretary, Dawn, right? There were the riots following the King assassination.
Right.
And so you're starting to see her life and what it's like for somebody who is from a very different neighborhood in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the case of Dawn, it actually seemed like maybe they're interested in exploring a character, you know, which is what they do so well, you know, rather than just kind of dress it up around the edges, which is, you know. So maybe next season. I mean, we're heading, it's 1968. I mean, that year is really pointed to as kind of a turning point of the 60s. That was like the end of the 60s. A lot of people saw it because... you had the assassinations that year, and you had the election of Richard Nixon, which they kind of gloss over in this show.
Right.
But it, you know, it seems to be building to that. But then they sort of jump ahead and say, "Oh, Nixon's been elected."
And it is funny because aren't they all for Nixon? I mean, all of them are pretty.
Except
much
Peggy's for Bob. No, there's some debate about: are you for Nixon? Or are you for Hubert Humphrey or it's not Hubert Humphrey? It's Eugene McCarthy.
McCarthy, right?
Or Bobby Kennedy? Because there seems to be some debate, at least among the copywriters, who you're going to support. But then later on, there's some line that Don has when he's in the bar and he encountered this guy who's basically trying to bring him Jesus and says something about Jesus already's come, Nixon's been elected or something like that. Now, speaking of, so redemption, that's another theme that the series seems to be exploring throughout its six seasons. Are we looking at Don's redemption? Do you think that's going to be a theme in season seven?
Yeah, and that's something we talk about every Monday when we debrief on the show. But where is it going? You know, this big confession, this, you know, what you would call in the trade a general confession, you know, to his children, basically. Now, as we're talking about Sally, you know, there's also the 5-year-old and the 3-year-old, and you wonder what they're making of all this kind of tableau of the brothel or whatever it is now. You know, is this going to lead to his redemption? Is him making kind of a clean breast of things going to help him? Now, you know, at the very end, he gets fired from the firm, or he's at least put on leave for a long time. And I could see it going, you know, two ways. I could see him, you know, redeeming himself. You know, you had mentioned in our private conversation maybe the show jumping ahead a few years and, you know, maybe him back at Sterling Cooper and doing well and, you know, being happy with Megan. Or I think one of the kind of my sort of fear is, you know, a darker thing would be to say that he confesses and he's sort of redeemed personally, but he doesn't make a go of it professionally. I mean, if he start, you know, sort of strikes out on his own, you know, Don Draper Inc., he might fail. And so the irony would be that he's personally, he's trying to be honest, but it doesn't work professionally. And I keep thinking about all these death images, the beach, that ad that he did, the sort of near drowning, the falling man at the beginning of the credits. And I'm hoping it doesn't lead to, suicide or something like that. I'm hoping it leads to a little bit of redemption.
Well, at the end of every season, there's been kind of a big moment, a big twist. So I really think Matthew Weiner, I don't know how you pronounce the name, is who's the creator of the show, is leading us to kind of an epic moment at the end. I mean, he was a writer on The Sopranos. The Sopranos had like an ending that people are still talking about.
Yeah.
So I see something similar happening. I'm wondering like whether or not, you know, given that shows like The Sopranos and Mad Men have been all about kind of subverting the TV genre, which has traditionally been about redemption,
right,
or like putting
some
happy
sort of
ending,
conclusion right,
putting
yeah.
a happy ending on it. I'm wondering if he's going to resist that.
I hope it doesn't, you know, fade to black like Tony Soprano. I found that really sort of unsatisfying. But I think that makes a good point that that it would sort of work against type, and that that might be very vague.
Right.
I am thinking that by the time we come back next season, that leave will be over, you know, and we'll have to know what Megan decided about whether or not she's going to stay, because
right.
he basically, pulled the rug out from under her. I thought that was also while he was trying to help Ted go back to California, Megan had already made moves to quit her job and to get a job out in California. And I thought that I was actually pretty selfish. I mean, to kind of placate the person that he wants to become, he, basically kind of pulls the rug out from his wife. So I don't know if she's going to be around next season.
Yeah, no, I'm very interested to see what happens, because Matthew Weiner, when he wants to, can really do redemption very well.
Yeah.
And I mean, that I was really, as I said before, really moved by the end of this season. So I kind of want to see him do that. If he, or, you know, is he going to be more loyal to like his, mentorship with David Chase and do something, as you said, vague or, really unexpected.
Well, the irony is that, and it dawned on me a few days after the season ended, everyone at his firm now knows his background.
Yep.
I mean, everyone knows that he's basically been lying. Now, I mean, if he sort of continues on and says, my name's not even Don Draper. What is it, like
right.
Dick Edwards?
Dick Whitman.
Dick Whitman. So now he's like sort of fake, like movie star names.
Too, yeah.
What that's going to do. And what that's going to do even with his relationship with people like Roger. And what's the name of the older guy played by Robert Morris?
Oh, yes. I'm blanking out his name now. Burt Cooper. Yeah.
And how they'll feel about being lied to for so many years, whether or not they'll be able to move ahead. So the confession might come with a price.
Well, this has been a great conversation. I mean, this tells you how good TV can be and what it really can. I mean, these are characters that people are living with. It's like, I imagine what it was like reading novels back in the 19th century, where people were really engaged and really are learning from these characters.
Like our Dickens.
Our Dickens,
right.
So we look forward to a conversation next year.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Father Jim.